That's right. It's another day for RFA. This is ZapperLink stepping in for Dual Parallel. That's right, my friends. This was a last-minute attempt to save a show. Turns out Dual Parallel cannot make it today because Dual's box kicked the bucket during the recording session. And we had originally planned to just air a rerun of an old show of RFA, but I figured with everyone that waits for the special day, a rerun wouldn't cut it. So I'm going to do my best to make it a good show and do Dual proud and do the RFA fans proud. On the top of the list today, we have Kazaa. Yeah, Kazaa makes the news again. And yes, this time, it's not them that's in trouble. It's the RIAA that's in trouble. Kazaa is suing the RIAA for misuse of their network. Many of you have been on most product-serving devices or media where you come across that nice document that says, hey, if you don't abide by these terms of using our network, then you are violating our terms of use. Well, Kazaa is suing RIAA for doing just that. According to them, their spying and their method of catching the peer-to-peer users and suing them, they're violating Kazaa's network policy. So bravo, Kazaa. Another one towards the RIAA. Hopefully that lawsuit will go good for them. Kazaa also has another thing out for them. They're starting up their own IP phone service. That's correct. It's basically a service provided by Kazaa. It's called Skype. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. The purpose of it is to offer free, unlimited phone service between users with a sound quality near to what developers dub POTS, which is plain old telephone service. Unlike Kazaa, which, you know, drew the wrath of the music industry, Skype won't stir up any illegal issues, and hopefully it will provide us, the end users, with a better method of dealing with today's problem with, you know, the horrible service. I can't say they're all horrible because I haven't tried them all, but we all run into that dislikes and likes of our current phone providers. Okay, on to the next topic. A great thing is going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow is Intel's Unwired Day. Yes, that's correct. Well, what does it mean to us? That means anybody who has a Wi-Fi card can go out and use the internet for free. That's right, free wireless internet. Intel is sponsoring nationwide around the U.S. Coffee shops, places of business, gas station, everywhere will be free internet. This is part of a little thing they're doing to kind of sponsor to kind of promote Wi-Fi and the industry that it provides. You can find out more information about that at www.intel.com/unwire/. It's a great site. Go check it out and participate. Let's see how many people we can get on there. Okay. I think that's awesome. I live right near Intel place, so I'll definitely be war driving and checking out and seeing who has what, and maybe find out who during this time was offering it, and maybe get back to you guys and let you know who in the Phoenix area was offering the wireless. Another great thing is out now. It's the new Nopix 3.3. For those of you who haven't used Nopix, Nopix is basically on CD Linux. It runs completely in RAM. It doesn't affect your hard drive. It doesn't affect your computer whatsoever. And it's a Linux distribution, so you can use KDE, GNOME, Fluxbox. You can have the full use of Linux without having to change anything on your computer. What does this new Nopix offer? Well, it offers updated programs, obviously. It's running the new 2.4.22 kernel and also includes the new X. I know a lot of people are picky with X, but it does include that. It also has the new KDE in there. Fortunately, I haven't really had a chance, but fortunately I'm going to get a chance right after the show to try it out, and it sounds good, so hopefully I'll get it burned and check that out real soon. We also have another issue on hackers. It turns out DirecTV Hacker is the first person convicted under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. That's right. The first jury conviction ever under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. A Florida man was convicted in Los Angeles. Kind of a little odd way to convict someone right across the nation. He was convicted of selling hardware used to pirate DirecTV broadcasts. The guy's name was Thomas Michael. He was 38 years old, and he was found guilty on one count of conspiracy and two counts of selling unlawful decryption devices and three counts of violating the DMCA. And, man, I just hate looking at the list of what he's violated. I mean, this DMCA is kind of becoming a little bit ridiculous in what they can nail you with. He's facing up to 30 years in prison, and he has fines up to $2.7 million. When will the money rage end? He's looking to be sentenced around January 26th by U.S. District Judge Christina Snyder. Okay, I really didn't have any freak news. I mean, the Kazaa thing was kind of more towards the phones, but unfortunately did not have... Well, wait a second here. I do have an email, so I guess I'll throw this into the freak news. Unfortunately, I do not have the tones, or actually I do have the tones, but I didn't have them ready. You can blame me for that, but I did have an email for RFA. This one comes from Decoder. Decoder wrote RFA saying, I was catching up on some old shows listening to RFA 67. Great show, by the way, as always. As I tried calling that toll-free, Spanish-only directory assistance, the number for that is 877-411-2411. Well, here's what happened. I got a recording, in Spanish, of course, and let it play out, thinking I would get connected with an op. Instead, I started... It started ringing again about four or five times, and it played the same Spanish message again. It was about 5 a.m. Eastern time, so I guess it was after business hours. Yeah, most likely would have been after business hours. This time I decided to press star, and boom. A number which I will not disclose was spoken, and it said, please enter your password, followed by the pound sign. Well, Decoder tried a password, and bang, it worked. Now, here's the deal. The number is a Sprint PCS phone out of Santa Ana, California, with the 877 number pointed at it. When I got into the voicemail, there was a new message. I pressed star and bypassed listening to it and kept it as new. You get the normal Sprint menu after that, 1 to listen to messages, 2 to send a message, 3 to change your options, and 8 to make a call. You must, however, using 8, you must be calling from your Sprint phone in order to use this option. He continues on saying, since I don't speak much Spanish, I'm not sure this directory assistance is still in service. Man, I'm slurring all over the place. If it still works, they're probably not open 24/7. Most likely not. And the 8 gets forwarded to someone's cell phone after hours. After all, it's cheaper than a real voicemail system in the call center. Anyways, I hope this info is useful to you, and, of course, RFA is the dang. Thank you, Decoder, for writing in. We all appreciate the extra info. I'm sure a few of you RFA listeners will go try that out. Outside of that, I don't really have any good freak news. Voice over IP, a lot of you have probably heard about. That's kind of the new in thing for telephones nowadays. For those of you who do not know what voice over IP is, voice over IP is basically your phone sent over a network protocol. It's basically using internet telephony to the next level. Well, what it allows is someone on the, say, West Coast talks to someone on the East Coast for free because you're using the internet instead of an alternative media, which I'm sure in the future people are going to start charging outrageous amounts for once the phone companies get a hold of this. But for now, there's normally a flat rate. You use it. I know a few schools around here. I know businesses in Phoenix that have it. And I can't remember the name of the college, but it also has free voice over IP phones for everyday students, staff, and employees and whatnot. So get out there, get on Google, look up Voice over IP. It's going to be a new hot thing. It's still been in the works, and people are trying it out more and more. So if you'd like to get towards the new theme of things, go check that out. Okay, now I also had planned was an SE Linux review. It was supposed to be aired a while back, but we had some problems communicating between myself and Duel, so basically I'll give it now. SE Linux, it's a great opportunity to push your security to the limits on your Linux operating system. Basically what it is an access list and policy-based options for your kernel. And what it does is, basically, let's say you have a website and someone creates a buffer overflow on your system, breaks in, and by normally, they'd get a shell account and they'd have almost free roam over your system. Well, with SE Linux, we can provide access lists and policies on top of the already existing Linux file permissions and directory permissions and whatnot. This basically allows, once they get to the buffer overflow, they're pretty much dropped there because each and everything from hardware to services, every one of them has an access list of only what they need to minimally do their job. So say someone now with SE Linux gets on there and tries to break into your computer, let's say they hack into your web browser or whatever, they are now having to deal with not only your file permission issues, but they have to deal with that service was only allowed with that access list to certain things on that computer, so they are very, very, very limited, and about 85% of the time, it's almost useless to them, and they have nothing more to do unless they find another method to get by, which I have yet to hear of through the SE Linux development team. When I was trying it out, I was trying it on the latest, I tried it first out on the 2.4 release, and I'm currently working with a 2.6 release, test 4. It's something that I wouldn't recommend necessarily for the beginner Linux users, but I would definitely suggest it for anybody who has had kernel experience with modifying, who's willing to deal with bugs, who's willing to sit there and deal with certain issues, because again, it's development stuff, it's not perfected, it's definitely security, so any security is going to bring along a little bit of a struggle to modify your system to be perfect. But I'm not discouraging, by all means, I'm not discouraging anybody who's new, who's interested in getting SE Linux working or modifying their kernel. It's great as a Linux user to get out there and try again. Kernel modding is an excellent hobby. I guess you really can't call it a hobby. It's kind of just, you know, okay, I have this custom kernel, I have this custom kernel. But it is a good way to work with your system. It's one of the greatest resources having Linux over Windows is you get to play with your own kernel. So don't just let it sit there. Have some fun with it. You can get SE Linux at www.nsa.gov. Yes, I said nsa.gov. They are, surprisingly, the proud inventors of SE Linux. And let me continue with the web address before I ramble on too much further. www.nsa.gov/SELinux/. You'll find an excellent resource there, as well as the mailing list. I suggest if you're going to play with SE Linux, you hop on that mailing list, because you'll run into an amazing group of people, as well as some profoundly nice people that'll help you fix up your problems. And if you're looking for someone to discuss kernel security, these people are it. What time is it? We haven't even gotten into the show. Man, Duel, I give you mad props for getting the show, because I know you guys got to pull up this stuff every week and do this. I remember you mentioning something to me about apt-get versus Red Hat Network. I personally have used apt-get, both apt-get and the Red Hat Network. It's a personal preference thing. Apt-get is a lot quicker, a lot more privacy, I would say, because Red Hat Network nowadays seems to want to know about you, want to know about your system. You got to have a registered service. It's kind of bad when you have a Linux, and it's totally open source, and then you got to have provided services. So apt-get kind of solves that problem where we can get a reasonable amount of stuff. It's quick, it's easy. It's called apt-get hyphen rpm. You can get apt.freshrpms.net. There you can get an RPM, pop it on your Red Hat box. Quick, clean, easy. Now, I said before, Red Hat Network did have subscription, just so I don't leave anybody in the dark. You can get a demo account with them, which you use on one box, and you simply stick to that, and you can use the Red Hat Network. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, hey, man, I got 8 or 9 Red Hat clusters in my bedroom. Well, what you can do to deal with that, the Red Hat Network issue, is when you go into your settings, change it for each box that you use, and you can run about 8 or 9 machines on that, no problem. They never notice it. I do it constantly, so it's no big deal. Apt-get, I have to definitely recommend for anybody who is tired of searching for RPMs or just doing an update. Updating your system regularly can be a hassle when you're trying to go get all the different RPMs. I personally do it manually, but this is a better way for those of you who do not wish to waste your time with searching out the site and trying to find each RPM. Another resource, while I'm at it, to throw at you to find RPMs is www.rpmfind.net. You can find almost any release, any version, any distribution that you need. They have an excellent directory that is amazing. It'll tell you what each RPM uses, what it requires for different distributions. It's excellent because I use Red Hat a lot. Most people know that I use Red Hat. And I have to find my RPM sometimes that I really just am too lazy to sit and deal with the compile. And it'll find versions for 9, it'll find versions for 5. And it's a great opportunity for those of you who are new to getting Linux and you don't want to deal with the hassle of compiling your own stuff. Some more stuff on the news front is a company named JetBlue. They're kind of a new, small airline company. I was told that they are being sued because they released their passengers' private information to a government agency. Now, that's not good. How would you like to step on your airlines? Welcome to our JetBlue Airlines. Everything that you've told us today, we will be passing on to everyone else. Thank you, and enjoy your flight. Yeah, I don't think I'll be riding that airline anytime soon. But then again, we have tons of services that are also very much like that. I'm running out of things to say. Shoot. It's a lot easier said than done, ladies and gentlemen. You guys got to give Dual Parallel, Blind Inquisitor, Stink Dog, all the RFA people that host this show a lot of credit because I'm kind of soloing it here in my room, trying to do this recording so that you guys have something out. And if you have a chance, email Dual Parallel, Blind Inquisitor, Stink Dog, all the other people that have hosted recently or in the past, and tell them thank you because, I mean, without them, the show would not be possible to do. You can find their information, obviously, on the RFA website. Moving right along, I don't have really any good news as far as new news. I have some here and there news to report. I was reading on Flashdot.com. I'm going to pull up the article so I can give you guys a little bit more information on it. I ran across it. It was kind of interesting. It's about Nintendo 64 technology that China is working with. Sorry about that. That's really bad radio to pause like that. I'm sorry, Duel. And the rest of you, obviously, out there. it was really interesting. I can't seem to find the article now, but basically what it is I believe what they were discussing is Nintendo was releasing basically a flash chip that you would go into local retail stores in China and go in there, you purchase it, they put it on your flash disk, and you pop it into your device, and you have a Nintendo 64 based game on flash. So you can just pop it in, pop it out. There isn't too much information on it yet. To probably look for more information, I'd suggest getting on Nintendo's website and looking into that. Some more information out there as far as Linux goes. Those of you who are waiting for it, Mandrake 9.2 will be out soon. I'm not a personal favorite of Mandrake at all. I didn't really like that much, but we're not going to go into the large debate that'll ever last about the distro wars. Another person wrote to me earlier today when I found out I was going to do this show. They kind of threw some content at me, and one of it was regarding Microsoft doing all this problems with the vulnerabilities. Man, I'm just stumbling over my own tongue trying to get out this content. Microsoft has all these vulnerability issues lately that both large corporations use, government sites use, and even schools use that are vulnerable to all these DOS attacks, virus attacks, worm attacks, that it's becoming a realization that Microsoft might become an issue that violates our national security. It's becoming a wonder if Homeland Security might point their fingers in the future to Microsoft. Hopefully they'll get off their lazy whatever and fix these problems, because very soon in the future we might have to either move away from Microsoft being the middleman as far as what you use at school, what you use at home, what you use, well, maybe not at home. Majority of the listeners probably do use Linux. At least that's what I've gathered. And we'll move towards a different operating system, maybe, such as Linux, BSD, or whatever might come the way. But for now, we're just going to have to sit and continue patching until we either get tired of it, or the U.S. government steps in and enforces Microsoft to either step down or fix up their stuff. It's plain and simple. Other information that's been out in the talk lately is I was talking with my friend over at work, and we were discussing some of Windows modifications. Now, a lot of people like to sit there and bash Windows, but yeah, hey, some people have to use it. Now, the boring part about using Windows, especially Windows XP, Windows 2000, is the same old boring desktop. Well, we got this desktop, and we got the cute little start button at the bottom, right? And, you know, well, hell, who cares? I want mine to look more like Blackbox or KDE or whatnot. Well, there is solutions for you guys out there that you no longer have to put up with the everyday problem of using that boring Windows desktop. There's software out there called Lightstep. Lightstep is basically a shell. It's the same equivalence of Explorer.exe, except for it's Lightstep.exe. And what it does is allows you different access to API that will allow you to change the way your desktop looks, and you can reach that at www.lightstep.net. It's an excellent tool. I used to use it all the time on Windows 98, 2000, and I'm currently using it on XP. I was showing a few guys in IRC, Blind Inquisitor, regarding this, and they got a kick out of it. I suggest you guys use it if you're stuck with Windows and you're kind of griping because it's the same boring thing. If you want to bring a little activity into it, it's great to use as a Windows modification. Features you can do with that is transparencies. You can move your start menu. Not necessarily move it. It's kind of tricky. A lot of people look at it first thing and say, oh, well, you made the start bar just disappear. Well, really what you didn't do is you just changed the way it looks so much that the start menu is not there, but that bar is still there, except for it's used in a totally different way, and you can make your start, you can click in the middle of your screen and do just like Fluxbox does, and use a menu-driven system. You can add permanent fixations to your desktop. There's tons of options. I suggest you go check it out. Another thing we were talking about is that grand old thing. You ever been sitting in XP and all of a sudden you have your browser crash, and then bam, right after that pops up, would you like to send your information about this crash to Microsoft, pretty much? Well, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of hesitant on sending Microsoft anything, especially when it comes from my personal computer. So we discussed how to get rid of that. We did some research, and we found out that a program called svchost.exe actually is directly linked to this such occurrence. And what svchost does is it's a process or program that basically runs off RPC, and it looks at how you're performing, and when the crash initiates, something happens and calls upon this and pops it up and then sends it out. Well, what we did, and I tried it, and it worked for me. I don't know if it'll work on every box because I haven't tried it yet, but what you can do is get out there and Control-Alt-Delete, first thing you can do, and run up to your svchost. Don't close them all. This is a strong, strong warning to you, to those people that are out there. If you close them all, your Windows is going to immediately realize an RPC failure, and it's going to shut down your system. What you can do is you'll find three or four of them running on a general, well-used XP Home Edition. You can disable all but the one with the highest memory usage. That is the one who is hogging all the stuff. Now, if you want to disable it altogether, what you're going to have to do is first do that so you don't have all this error crap popping up while you're doing it. Go into your services, disable I believe it's called Help or something like that. I can't remember the exact title was of it, but it's the Help and Services. And basically, if you look at the info, it basically reports crashes. Disable that. It'll disappear, and you won't have to deal with that stupid annoyance of, hey, do you want to send all your private information to Microsoft? Yeah, right. Click, it's gone. Make sure if you're tweaking with anything too much with Windows, always key to doing Windows, any modification with Windows really, is to go in and back up your registry. The most important thing to do is back up your registry and back up major file systems if you can. Back up your directory for your C directory for Windows and Windows NT if you happen to be using that type of file system. Another problem that we were discussing, we were kind of laughing about, is a lot of people like to download stuff. And with that downloading, you'll run into such events as Gain and that Gator stuff. Well, everybody hates getting that stuff. It comes on, and you can never seem to get that stupid stuff to disappear. Well, there's one way to do it. First of all, you got to go into your programs and delete. Go into your control panel. Go into your control panel and delete the program Gator. Get rid of it. Gone. Well, you think, hey, I've gotten rid of that and Gain. Well, no, you haven't. What you need to do is go into your registry and further remove it, because otherwise it sits there and lurks, and you haven't completely gotten rid of it. You'll still get pop-ups. You'll still get messages. I get occasional outbound notices for Gator and for Gain, which I don't tolerate one bit. If it's coming out of my network, I don't want anybody else to have it unless I say they can have it. So I went into the registry. You can find it under local machine, I believe, or local users, and you go into programs, and you'll run into a thing called Gator, and you'll also run into another file called Gain. Delete both of them. It's safe to delete those registry entries. They don't do anything outside of running with the program, so go ahead and just remove them right off the bat. You'll also notice something called save. Save is another popular problem with Windows users having that, and they have pop-up ads. Save just lurks on your system and just causes all type of lag with their with a program sitting in your process list. So what you can do is there's another file called save. Delete that. You can control delete in your and in your process list. Kill it, and it shouldn't pop up again. Again, I can't stress how much of importance it is to back up your registry. I can tell you what to do, but in all reality, you got to make sure you do it right. Otherwise, it's not going to work, or you're going to have some issues, and those issues aren't any fun to deal with. So I've kind of explained how to get around some of the Windows issues we have in today's environment for Windows, but I hope that some of you that have a strong urge to get away from Windows, but still have to stick with Windows, to play around with it. If it's not a work computer and you're okay to play with it, go ahead and get Lightstep, get Darkstep. There's a bunch of them out there. You can go on freshmeat.net and find all types of themes, all types of plugins, and have fun with your Windows. Don't let it be that same boring operating system that you have to deal with day in, day out. And it's also fun because you can also use a theme. They have a theme out there that looks exactly like Linux, and you can trick out your coworkers or fellow students, or hell, even your own mom, dad, brother, girlfriend, whoever, and show them that, hey, this is Windows, but you know what? It looks like Linux. Okay, so that's enough of the whole Windows mod thing. I don't want to go too much into that because I know some of you don't use Windows at all. You don't want to hear about that. So we're going to please everybody, hopefully, tonight. And I'm probably talking too fast, so I think I'm going to bring down the notch a little bit. And I'm running out of content, but I'm kind of going off the mind, so that's all good. That's all good. I'm not going to disappoint anybody, hopefully. Yeah, it looks like we have also some more information as far as news regarding security. It turns out there's new SSH vulnerability. Again, a buffer overflow to SSH. You guys might want to go out there and patch that up. It's very important for those of you who are trying to stay on top of Linux to make sure that your SSH, if you use it frequently, is always updated. SSH or any remote access point is frequently used and attacked by script kiddies and whatnot. So make sure you keep that updated if you use that along with your web servers. I know some of you are probably really update on that, but make sure you go out there. For those of you who are using Apache, there's Apache 1.3.2.8 released. Check that out. There's also a new Snort out. The new Snort out, www.snort.net. Now let me double check that to make sure that that's the correct address. Yes, www.snort.net. Snort.net is not the correct address. That is the group that people, I guess, decided to make. But maybe it's snort.com. It's either snort.com or .org. No, it's .org. I don't know why I can't seem to memorize that. I use it constantly. It is snort.org, and the new Snort 2.0.2 was available September 17th, and so it was a little while ago, but it's cool. The great new features in it, as well as the bug fixings, are excellent. Some issues that I personally have been having issues with. They added thresholding and suppression features, which is great for those of you who really are Snort gurus. That's an excellent thing to add in. They fixed the TCP RST processing bug that was found. Another great thing that they had to fix because, we're not going to go into that issue, but I'm glad they fixed that up. It also features the cleanup of the ARP spoofing. ARP spoofing is basically faking ARP packets. Normally follows in line with ARP hijacking, normally which entails somebody either stealing an IP address, spoofing an IP address, poisoning a router and whatnot. It allows Snort to pick up a little bit better on that because they patched that up as well. They're also fixed the Win32 version and thankfully, finally included the event log support. Nothing's better than having a version of IDS, and guess what? Your event logs don't work with crap. Another thing that was fixed was Stream 4. I don't know exactly all that stuff, so I couldn't give you details on that. But go ahead and go out there and download it. Don't think that you just need Snort for or an IDS, period. You don't need just an IDS for a server. I personally use a Snort on every one of my systems. I have Snort on my laptop. I have Snort on my desktop. I have Snort on my server. Every one of my points of presence on the network has some sort of IDS. IDS is great for detecting, well, obviously, as it says, it's an intrusion detection system. It's great for picking up on people getting in. You can filter them out, hook it up with IP chains, and you can get a fairly decent security going with an IDS and a firewall. So that's a great new option to check out. I don't really know what else to tell you that's really, really interesting. I was playing with my new wireless card, by the way. I don't know if anybody out there knew that I got a new wireless card. I was stuck with a Simmons SS 1051, I think. Or no, it was 1021. And it was a great wireless card for Windows. But I didn't seem to grow fond of its support in Linux. I tried hard to patch drivers, make my own drivers, tried like crazy to run through Cygwin, and it just did not work. So what I did is went out and bought me, by recommendation, a Dell TrueMobile. And yeah, that wasn't exactly what I was recommended, but I was recommended an Orinco Gold. Orinco is by far what I will recommend for the rest of my life until I see something that's better, and that'll be pretty hard to beat. Orinco cards, first of all, excellent Linux support. Excellent. I have mad props to Orinco for working on Linux. Works on Windows, excellent. Monitor mode supported. Great war driving, great signal. I noticed an immediate difference between using the Simmons card and the Dell TrueMobile. So, for those of you who are interested in a wireless card, go Orinco, don't look back. Unless you're going to go Cisco. Cisco has a stronger signal, but still I'd point you in the direction of the Orinco. On another side of the world, we're having some issues with what was it? Oh, DOS attacks. Yeah, there's a lot of DOS attacks going around. It's not as popular as the eBay and the Yahoo ones, but there has been some net vandals, if you will, going around and playing DOS attack games. Now, guys, DOS attacks I'm not going to preach on. It's not nice. It's kind of annoying. Nobody really likes the person who just knocks you offline. But there's a lot of stuff going out there for that issue. And so watch your back. Make sure you have your logs going. Don't piss off any of those people out there. And hopefully everything will be okay. There's been rumors. Now, these are unspoken rumors as far as large media, but through security forums and whatnot, I've heard possible competitions against large corporations. I don't have too much information. I'm not going to go too far into that because I don't have too much information, and I don't want to make false awareness of that. But there is some rumors going on with that, so keep your eye on the news. Hopefully, we'll see some activity. Actually, hopefully not, because, you know, DOS attacking is not really cool, because it takes out services, costs a lot of money, and it really proves no point other than you're a vandal. Okay, I pulled up some more freak news for us. Nokia, sorry about that, I had to move the mic. Nokia launches competition for game developers. Yeah, that's right. Nokia is getting into the game. Basically, what it is Connect Coder Engage Mobile Game Deck Game Battle seeks games using full mobile gaming functionality of the Engage, which will be available worldwide on October 7th. It sounds excellent. It supports Bluetooth. It supports GPRS. That's excellent. Excellent news for those of you who understand those. GPRS is General Packet Radio Service. I don't want to go too much into that, but it's an excellent excellent opportunity for those of you who are on the move and want a little gaming too. So it should be an interesting pull towards getting a little bit of edge on the new mobile to mobile units going out there. The competition is supposed to end January 1st of 2004, and the prize is a fairly good prize amount. It's $34,000, it's $34,431, but, you know, you get the general point. It's worth quite a bit of money. So, check into that. Another hot edge on the cell phones right now is getting those video cameras on there. I've seen a lot of people have them. Slip got a new phone with a camera on it. Other people I know have phone cameras on them. So apparently, taking pictures while you're on the phone is an important thing. But don't get that wrong, mixed up. Phones with cameras on them are a great opportunity for social engineering projects. Excellent resource for those quick urban exploration runs. So don't think that I'm dogging them. It's just a camera's a little bit on the expensive side of what you can do with your phone, but. Hey, if we're going to have an all-in-one thing, I'm still waiting for those little, you know, like they show in all the movies, those things that wrap around your hand, kind of look like a gauntlet thing, you know. That would be awesome. I heard in Popular Science magazine a while back, there was supposed to be something called, what was it called? I think it was called Wizard Scroll. It was supposed to come out in 2006 to 2010. It was supposed to have PDA, computer, cell phone, all that stuff into it. And it was supposed to be just like I said, like a gauntlet sitting there. And I'm waiting to hear more on that. The site has never been updated for it. But hopefully we'll see some more information on that soon. We're running towards the end of the show. But I got a few more things to cover. Hopefully, I was hoping to get some calls in, but unfortunately, I could not for today. It's been great. I'm sorry again for the show. I know it wasn't of RFA quality, but hopefully it was enough to tie you over till the next RFA duel. We'll have something good planned for you guys and make sure it's well worth the wait. And again, I'm sorry if it didn't sound very professional or if the quality wasn't good enough. It was kind of done in the last hour right before, I mean minutes before the RFA aired. This show aired on the Rant Radio. The show was made. So please bear with me again, and thank you for listening. Late. Party.